Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's embattled Surgeon General undergoes a delicate confirmation procedure in the state Senate.
Why would the chief medical officer agree to reduce our county health department services by hundreds of millions of dollars when we have so many in the coverage gap?
Also tonight, lawmakers are talking through gaming legislation, and while many agree there's no perfect answer, they seem optimistic they'll find a solution that's at least good enough.
I think it was Voltaire that said, "Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good." And never have those words rung more true than in a gaming bill.
We'll also get the latest on a bill to safeguard Florida from foreign invaders, allow people with gun licenses to bring their weapons into airport concourses, and mental health reform is being considered within the state's criminal justice system. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. In the run-up to today's Senate meeting, questions surrounded whether Florida Surgeon General John Armstrong would be confirmed. He's been under fire for the decrease in enrollment in the Children's Medical Services Program, rising HIV infections, and staff cuts in local health departments. Lynn Hatter reports Florida lawmakers had plenty of questions for Armstrong.
Early in his confirmation hearing, Florida Surgeon General John Armstrong tried to highlight what he considers achievements.
We are healthier now than we were 3 years ago. We have the lowest infant mortality rate in our history. We have 125,000 more Floridians at healthy weight. That's the population of Gainesville. And we're 12th among all states in the Gallup Healthways Well-Being Index, a jump of 14 spots in 1 year.
But for lawmakers, those achievements are not the focus. The department under Armstrong has been criticized for changes in the Children's Medical Services Program that dropped more than 9,000 sick and disabled kids. The department changed the criteria and has started re-enrolling children. DOH has also been criticized for a large number of staff cuts and rising numbers of HIV infections in South Florida. Armstrong says he wants to improve services, but Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel does not buy that.
Why would the chief medical officer agree to reduce our county health department services by hundreds of millions of dollars when we have so many in the coverage gap, 567,000, and even more uninsured, possibly adding up to 1 million, and an epidemic of escalating HIV new cases and the threat of Zika virus? And who knows what's next?
According to Niceville Republican Senator Don Gates, the Florida Department of Health has seen 200,000 fewer patients in the past 3 years. Gates notes part of the decrease in services is due to more people becoming insured and going elsewhere, as well as Florida's transition to Medicaid managed care. But he says there are some areas of the state where DOH has scaled back despite the numbers of uninsured people remaining high.
What's happening to those people who used to come to the county health department for primary care, preventive care, educational services, and now in some of those extraordinarily challenging communities, half as much service is being provided as 3.5 or 4 years ago?
Armstrong says in those areas there are other places people can go for health care, such as federally qualified health centers that operate in many parts of the state. But Gates indicated he does not fully believe that explanation. Governor Rick Scott has vetoed millions of dollars lawmakers have tried to steer to other health care providers in some of the most needy areas, and Gates pressed Armstrong on whether the Surgeon General would push the governor to keep that funding intact.
Are you prepared then to advise the governor to not veto any longer appropriations made by this legislature for free clinics.
President Gates, I am prepared to advise the governor that free and charitable clinics provide important services of value in our communities.
Republican Senator Denise Grimsley offered a defense of Armstrong. She says it's been the legislature, not the Surgeon General, that has cut jobs in the department. She also asked him about his personal health. Armstrong has cancer and he's been in treatment. He acknowledges it's taken a toll.
As I have shared with some, I've really worked hard not to skip a beat. I do have to acknowledge that some of my public appearances have come down because there are certain times in my treatment where it's ill-advised to shake a lot of hands. But the reality is that I think we've made a lot of progress.
Grimsley, like Gates, puts the blame on Governor Rick Scott for vetoing funding that would have supported public health. Lawmakers peppered Armstrong with questions about his decisions regarding the deregulation of pediatric cardiology programs and ongoing delays with the state's medical marijuana program. The Senate Health Policy Committee confirmed him on a 6-4 vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
After stalling last week, the Florida Senate is expected to take up its version of a bill tomorrow to ratify the state's gambling agreement with the Seminole Indian tribe. Meanwhile, as we hear from Regan McCarthy, a House measure has garnered committee approval.
In a House committee, lawmakers approved a measure that would ratify the state's gambling agreement with the Seminole Indian tribe. But the representatives didn't pass that measure alone. Lawmakers tied the measure to a larger gaming bill through an amendment filed by Coral Springs Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz. Moskowitz says that makes sense because it's all gaming.
As we know here in Tallahassee, it's very rare that we have a bill that then separates these issues out. They're usually all together. I mean, we had the trauma train, we had, you know, the tax package of awesomeness, we had no taxes safe, we had down on taxes. These are huge bills with lots of issues, and we just don't get to vote up or down on each individual issue. We have to take them as a complete package and decide if there's enough good in the bill to vote for it or if there's too much bad in it to vote against it.
But linking the measures links the compact with a provision that allows slot machines at some paramutuals, but not others. And some lawmakers have concerns about how negotiators made that decision. St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Daryl Roussan says Gretna in Gadsden County has been pushing for slot machines for years. Community leaders say slot machines could help put an end to a cycle of poverty in the area. And Roussan says he can understand that.
Gaming may not be the panacea to all that which challenges certain communities. It does create hope, and that can be a catalyst for big change.
Cape Coral Republican Representative Dane Eagle has a similar question about a paramutual in his area.
I represent the voters of Lee County. We had a referendum, I believe, in 2012 that would allow for slots at our dog track in Bonita. I know that's not included in here, but it is included for other tracks. Is there a reason Lee County was exempt while or was left out while these others were included?
And lawmakers in the Senate have already begun raising similar concerns. But Republican Representative Jose Felix Diaz, who helped negotiate the compact, says there are some areas that could include Lee County where tribe members worry the paramutual might create too much competition. Part of the compact agreement gives the tribe exclusive rights to offer certain types of gambling. But Diaz did say he'd look into the possibility of expanding slots in other areas.
You know, I have been talking to the folks of Gretna and talked to them about my general position on where they stand. And if they come in, for example, it will certainly leave an opportunity for others to come in. But again, we'll deal with the varying levels of heartburn and how that affects the compact if and when we get there and depending where the votes are at.
Meanwhile, Diaz reminds lawmakers that while the process of crafting the compact likely leaves room for imperfection, he doesn't think that means the measure is a bad one.
I think it was Voltaire that said, "Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good." And never have those words rung more true than in a gaming bill.
The House also passed a bill that would require any future gaming changes to get voter approval. A similar measure is not yet on the Senate's schedule. The Senate Regulated Industries Committee is expected to take up a version of a compact ratification measure as well as a larger gaming measure Wednesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the legislative drive to keep the Sunshine State safe from foreign invaders continues.
Look, my family was immigrants too. This is a preface to the question. We're all immigrants on some level.
Yeah.
But isn't it fair to make a distinction in this case?
Florida lawmakers are considering a proposal that would allow concealed weapons in airports.
Right now, in the United States, there are 41 other states that already allow this practice.
And to hear many politicians tell it, all regulation of business by government is bad, right? Well, maybe not if that regulation protects certain businesses from competition.
There's always the fascinating experience of pro-business, maybe conservative or fiscally conservative-minded people saying, no, 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 keep this regulation in place because it protects me against competition.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
An international refugee crisis and the growth of ISIS abroad and online are sending shockwaves around the world. Some of those shocks are rippling through the Florida legislature. Kate Payne reports some lawmakers are moving forward with plans to give the governor sweeping powers over immigration.
Jacksonville Republican Representative Lake Ray is taking steps to broaden the governor's authority over immigrants and refugees. Ray's bill would empower the governor to restrict the entry of so-called invaders and restricted persons, or people coming from areas where terrorists organize or train. House Democrats, including Miami Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez, question the constitutionality of the bill.
I look at the staff analysis, which I think very astutely raises several pretty major constitutional issues, equal protection, due process, preemption. There are also some state constitutional issues as well.
Ray and others criticize the federal immigration system and fear terrorists will slip into the country along with asylum seekers. Brandon Representative Ross Spano implies there's just something different about Middle Eastern refugees.
Look, my family was immigrants too. This is a preface to the question. We're all immigrants on some level.
Yeah.
But isn't it fair to make a distinction in this case?
That sentiment is echoed in Congress and on the presidential debate stage. But critics say Middle Eastern refugees undergo the most stringent vetting of any immigrants to the U.S. Layla Abdelaziz represents the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Here she is giving a rundown of that vetting process.
Five federal agencies work together to screen these individuals. This process takes between 18 to 24 months, and it includes a USCIS agent leaving the country, going to the field, interviewing the individual and the family for at least an hour, and as well as screening their biometric data on an international level.
Ahmed Yaksan is an immigration lawyer and an immigrant, and he remembers this process well. Yaksan says a recent trip to his native Lebanon reminded him of the meaning of religious liberty in America.
I really saw what the United States means. It means that I can sleep on my pillow in the middle of the night, and the chances of someone knocking my door or breaking my door down and killing me because I'm a Muslim are very rare. They're very low. Where I might actually get that threat in my home country.
Representative Rodriguez raises another concern. Ray's bill would burden FDLE with the additional screening and vetting of immigrants.
The irony here, I think, is that FDLE and local law enforcement are going to be spending added resources duplicating what already occurs at the federal level. So in an ironic twist, I think this actually sets us backwards in terms of community safety.
Background checks and constitutionality aside, Layla Abdelaziz questions the intent behind the bill.
Legislators are sending a message to Floridians is read between the lines. We don't want Muslims in this country. Islam and the West are mutually exclusive. And this creates the political climate that is unhealthy to properly integrate refugees who are fleeing political carnage, who are the utmost and frontline victims of political carnage, extremism, and radicalism.
But lawmakers could be making a mountain out of a legislative molehill. While the House version of the bill is moving forward to its final committee stop, the Senate version has not had a single hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Florida's legislature has considered a number of high-profile gun measures this session, but with most of them seemingly dead in the Senate, another proposal is getting its first hearing. Nick Evans reports airports may have to allow concealed weapons in terminals.
Campus carry, open carry, airport carry? The first two measures appear dead for the 2016 session, with Senate Judiciary Chair Miguel Diaz de la Portilla refusing, at least for now, to bring them up for a vote. But Shelby Republican Senator Wilton Simpson's airport carry legislation is just beginning its journey. And it's not like his plan is unprecedented.
Who is it? Come here.
Captain Lorenzo?
Yeah.
John McClain.
Yeah, I know who you are. You're the that just broke 7 FAA and 5 District of Columbia regulations running around my airport with a gun shooting at people. What do you call that?
Self-defense.
That, of course, is American hero John McClane, played by Bruce Willis in 1990's Die Hard 2, being chewed out by Dennis Franz's character, Airport Police Captain Carmine Lorenzo. It's still hard to believe Driving Miss Daisy won Best Picture that year. But in all seriousness, Simpson explains there's real-world precedent for his plan, too.
Right now, in the United States, there are 41 other states that already allow this practice, and including New York, Pennsylvania, California, most of the southern states. There's very few, obviously, that don't. But
getting a concealed weapons permit in some of those states, notably California and New York, is significantly more difficult than getting one in Florida. The U.S. Government Accountability Office reports as of 2012, despite having a population nearly double that of Florida, California had only 35,000 concealed carry permits, to Florida's 887,000. Florida's figure is now almost double that, coming in just shy of 1.7 million at the end of January this year. That prevalence gives some lawmakers pause. Here's Lake Worth Democrat Jeff Clemens.
So I guess what I was concerned about is the introduction of that weaponry, not of the law-abiding citizens, but just the fact that that is now in an airport terminal and is potentially accessible by somebody who's looking to do harm to someone, whereas right now that ability doesn't exist. So
Simpson allows a stolen weapon could be a concern. But he pushes back with an argument that has become typical of Florida's fight over gun rights.
Where the trade-off on that is that if I knew that there were concealed carry holders in the non-sterile side of the airport, I would be less likely to want to commit a crime like that because I would know potentially there were more people there that were concealed carries. That would be more of a deterrent, I would think.
But some in the airport industry are concerned about the proposal. Michael Stewart spoke on behalf of the Florida Airports Council.
If there are incidents, our LEOs, law enforcement officers, would have concerns as to who's carrying weapons and who's not. And this is our concern with the legislation.
The measure sailed through the Senate Criminal Justice Committee Tuesday like an expedited security line. But that probably shouldn't be a surprise. The committee often looks favorably on gun legislation. Its next stop is the Senate Judiciary Committee, the same place where campus carry and open carry have stalled out. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A bill reforming mental health within Florida's criminal justice system is continuing to move in the House and Senate, as we hear from Sasha Cordner.
There is a general consensus among the House and Senate, as well as mental health stakeholders, that people with mental illness risk overwhelming Florida's criminal justice system. So Miami Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla and Jacksonville Representative Charles McBurney are working together on bills to establish a framework for mental health courts to more efficiently address these cases. Both Republicans are doing this as chairs of their respective judiciary committees. Here's Diaz de la Portilla.
The bill authorizes the Department of Children and Families to create a pilot program to treat offenders who have been found incompetent to proceed to trial or found guilty by reason of not guilty by reason of insanity. As a community-based forensic commitment program, the program offers an alternative to traditional incarceration for persons who do not have a significant history of violence. The program will be modeled on Miami-Dade's Forensic Alternative Center.
McBurney, the bill's House sponsor, says it also includes help for veterans and juvenile offenders.
So this bill expands the definition of veteran for the purposes of participation in Veterans Court to include those discharged or released under a general discharge, allows judges to require qualifying veterans to participate in treatment programs as part of their probation or community control, and allows a juvenile offender with mental illness to be admitted to a delinquency pretrial program for treatment purposes, and allows a judge to dismiss charges against the juvenile upon the juvenile's successful completion of the program.
Laura Humans with the Ford Association of Counties supports the measure.
This is one of the Association of Counties' priority bills this session. We do fund the problem-solving courts, and we also fund a lot of the mental health services. So we appreciate this support from the state.
Barney Bishop with the Florida Smart Justice Alliance is a big supporter as well.
Smart Justice supported this excellent bill last year. We support this bill this year. It's really a no-brainer bill, and it's kind of amazing that some of the things in this bill hasn't already been done by 2015, but it's always a good time to get it done, so we fully support this bill.
Deerfield Beach Democratic Representative Gwendolyn Clark Reed has similar thoughts, adding she remembers last year supporting a similar effort by McBurney.
And Chair McBurney, I want to again this year say how, you know, this bill is going to really change the lives of many folks and families, too, whose loved ones have been languishing in these prisons where they really don't need to be. So I'm looking forward to the implementation of the new pilot program, as well as seeing this move further along.
And as for Orlando Democratic Representative Victor Torres, he says the measure holds a special place.
As a veteran, I really salute you, and I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. Many veterans returning home are subject to mental illnesses, and anything that can help our veterans, I'm all for it.
The House measure is now headed to the floor after passing its last committee last week. Meanwhile, the Senate measure has only had one hearing so far, but is slated for its second committee hearing Wednesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight you might think a conservative Republican legislature could easily agree on the concept that less government is better. But that seems not to be the case when it comes to deregulating professions like body wrapping and animal massage. We get that story from Jim Ash.
Republican Representative James Grant of Tampa wasn't surprised at the long list of lobbyists expressing concerns about his legislation, even though he says it's only peeling back the thinnest layer of government regulation.
There's always the fascinating experience of pro-business, maybe conservative or fiscally conservative-minded people saying, no, keep this regulation in place because it protects me against competition.
Grant's bill isn't exactly radical. It's supported by the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, and it deals with only a handful of the 300 regulated professions in Florida. For example, it would end the licensing or registration requirements for professions like body and hair wrappers, athletic agents, and labor unions.
Should a labor union have to pay for licensure and regulation by the Department of Business and Professional Regulations, or should they be able to go operate on their own with a minimum threshold in place? And my position and the department's position would be that currently the department has probably too much to do with labor unions.
Higher skilled professions like geology and interior design would still have to be licensed, but the bill would get rid of so-called certificates of authorization that are required to practice as a firm. Phil Leary, a lobbyist with the Florida Association of Professional Geologists, warned getting rid of the certificates would invite unfair competition. Here he is a few weeks ago testifying before the Senate Regulated Industries Committee.
All those geology companies in Georgia and Alabama that have that certificate of authorization under their state will come into Florida to do that work, and then our geologists will end up unemployed.
Republican Jeff Brandis of St. Petersburg is the Senate sponsor, and he wasn't buying the argument.
And I think the issue of out-of-state vendors and coming in is malarkey. I don't put any substantive value in that statement at all.
But Brandis reluctantly cleaved geologists from the bill to get it past the committee. He also exempted animal massage and animal acupressure after the Florida Veterinary Medical Association expressed concerns.
This amendment removes the section of the bill that would deregulate animal massage and animal acupressure. You will still need a license to heavily pet your dog.
Actually, the law only requires animal acupressure and animal massage to be done under the supervision of a veterinarian. But Brandis's point remains the same. Professional deregulation bills are controversial because the politics can be so convoluted. Last year, in a case called the North Carolina Board of Dental Examiners versus the Federal Trade Commission, a liberal majority of the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that regulators could be sued for anti-trade violations. The case arose after the dentist on the board shut down unlicensed competitors who were offering discount teeth whitening. Ari Bargle, a lobbyist for the conservative Florida Institute of Justice, praised the ruling when he testified for Brandis's bill.
The call for reforming laws that impinge on economic liberty has never been louder, and the momentum of the last 2 years has brought us very modest bills like this.
Sam Staley, director of the pro-business DeVoe Moore Center at Florida State University, doesn't think the bill goes far enough.
The vast majority of the occupations could be effectively regulated through private certification processes and the market itself, and that the state should increasingly look toward deregulating a whole bunch more occupations than just the ones that are in this bill.
But Samantha Padgett, a lobbyist for the Florida Retail Federation and the Beauty Industry Council, says body wrapping regulation should be left alone because it represents the perfect compromise. Body wrappers aren't licensed, but they must register and take safety courses. Otherwise, she says, people could get sick or hurt.
As your skin is the largest organ of your body, and it can help protect you, but it can also, if it is not treated properly, can open you up to infections and other harmful things like that. We would ask you to carefully consider if this is an area that needs to be deregulated because of a concern for public health, safety, and welfare.
Both bills face at least one more committee stop before reaching the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.